It's really exciting for me to be back here. I always liked this slot. It just never worked out. And it's a fun thing to do for me. And so I decided to do something different than what I've done in the past. We're going to be learning Megillas Esther. Now, I have a double reason for doing that. I just, yesterday, I just finished a sefer that I'm writing, I wrote, on Megillas Esther. I sent it to publishers, so I'm hoping that that will work out, Bezrat Hashem. So some of this is going to be that which I wrote. Some of it is things which I didn't, and we'll talk about why. And some of it are just like other ideas going through, like ideas that I think we can build on for Megillas Esther. Jewish publishing is an interesting thing. You actually have to pay them to publish your book. I'm learning that. It's fascinating. The reason that I think Megillas Esther is so fascinating is because we all know the story. And if you don't, there's a bad guy named Haman. He convinces the king Ahasuerus to kill the Jews. Esther's the queen. She saves the day. The Jews celebrate. And we learn this in... There may be some other details I left out. But, and then we eat. There's a lot of eating. We eat. She ate a lot of food. We eat. Well, we always, meaning, that's not a chiddush, we always eat. And we always find a good reason to eat, and that's great.
And also drink.
Also drink. So we'll have to discuss that also, Bezrat Hashem. But it's a story that we all know, and it's one that we rarely learn. It's a sefer that we rarely learn, maybe not we, that I rarely learned up until this point, because, you know, we all know the story, and so why bother reading it inside? I know exactly what's going to happen. But it's fascinating when you do read it inside. So in the future, I'm just going to bring Chumashim, because there's no point in photocopying Megillas Esther. It's in the back of each Chumash. You do not need it today. What I handed you here is actually from Sefer Ezra. Because what I discovered was that you have to understand what's going on in the world in order to understand Megillas Esther. So from a historical perspective, just to give some context, where in Jewish history are we? Megillas Esther takes place between the Chorban Bayis Rishon and the building of the Bayis Sheni. Yirmiyahu HaNavi famously has a nevuah that there will be 70 years between the two. What exactly that means, between what and what, is a matter of some dispute. In Megillas Esther, behind the scenes, in Sefer Ezra and Daniel, explicitly, and the Gemara makes it even more clear, we'll have to see all of these things, but there is a time period, a set time between the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash and the building of the second Beis HaMikdash. The Jews are east of Israel. They were sent east, and that's when the story of Megillas Esther happens. Towards the end of, actually, of that period. Now you'll recall, so Vayhi B'meach, of the first Pasuk, hopefully you'll know, and I'll read it. Vayhi B'meach HaShveros, Hu HaShveros, HaMolech MiHodu V'ad Kush Sheva V'Esrim U'Meah Medina. He is the leader of from Hodu until Kush. Exactly where that is doesn't interest me all that much, but it's somewhere around India all the way to Ethiopia, give or take countries here or there. That's a big swath of land. He is Melech Paras. He is the head of, he's the Persian king. And you might be wondering, if you recall, that the Persians did not destroy the first Beit HaMikdash. That was rather by Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Bavel. The Babylonians destroyed the first Beit HaMikdash under Nebuchadnezzar. So what exactly happened from the time of the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash until the story of Purim, which is very shortly before the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash, and I'll show you. So Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Bavel, is who destroys the Beit HaMikdash. He sends everybody east, generally to Bavel. Bavel is more or less around Iraq. And to the east of that, but like the borders are a little bit more fuzzy than they are nowadays, to the east of those countries. Nebuchadnezzar isn't the king forever. After he dies, there's Evel Merodach takes over. After him is someone named Belshazzar. Now Belshazzar is the last of the Babylonian kings. Belshazzar plays a very prominent role in Sefer Daniel. Now we never learned Sefer Daniel, didn't we? I didn't learn Sefer Daniel in school because it's mostly in Aramaic and it's really hard to get through. And it's not the same Aramaic as the Gemara. It's an Eretz Yisrael type of Aramaic. And so it's a little bit harder, even if you're familiar with Gemara, to get through. It makes it easier, but it's a little bit harder. Sefer Ezra is also partially in Aramaic. Why we don't learn Sefer Ezra, I don't know. But Sefer Daniel, I understand, it's also mystical and fine. But there's a lot of the historical parts to it. It tells you what's going on. Because Daniel is also living in that time period, and Daniel interacts with Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar and Daryovesh. He's the king after Koresh, who's after, we'll go through the whole list. But all of they interact, and you have to understand what's going on. So Nebuchadnezzar dies, I don't recall how, he dies, Evil-Merodach takes over, Belshazzar is now the Babylonian king after after Evil Merodach. Evil Merodach, if I'm not mistaken, is only a king for a short while. So Belshazzar is now the final king. And why does it matter? Because he is the last of the Babylonian kings. After him, Paras and Madai, they go together, they don't go together, not really my issue right now, take over, and are now, not only do they sort of take over that area of the world. They have a fight, they have a battle, and Paras now takes over and becomes the leading empire in the world, and Ahasuerus is not the first king there, he's the third Persian king. The first was Koresh, and then Daryavesh, and then Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus is from this new empire. And why that's really important, so the Malbim points out right in the beginning of Megillas Esther that Ahasuerus' situation, political situation, is a little bit fragile. Because if you think about it, I just quoted the kings, Nebuchadnezzar, Evil-Merodach, Belshazzar, after Belshazzar, Koresh, Daryavesh, Koresh, Ahasuerus, that's six kings in not so many years, right? That's a lot of turnover. That's a lot of political upheaval. Now, Belshazzar doesn't just end his kingdom. Belshazzar gets killed. Belshazzar gets killed, and then the Madaim take over. Madai and Paras have an alliance. Madai takes over. This is actually a very, very famous scene. Most people don't realize why it's so famous. But Belshazzar has a vision that there's the writing on the wall. Menei, menei, tekelu parsin. And he asks everyone to explain it. No one can. Daniel comes and explains it and says, you know, your kingdom is going to end very abruptly. It's going to be handed over to the Parsim. And that night he gets killed. That's where the writing on the wall comes from. That night he gets killed, and then it transfers to Paras. So why is all of this important? Because if you think now, the political turmoil of the time, people living there, so first of all, they don't have instant access to news like we do, which I think is crazy. But so things are, they're expecting things to be a little bit slower. That's a lot of turnover politically in a very short amount of time. The Malbim argues that much of Ahasuerus' beginning of his kingdom is establishing himself as the ruler, meaning people need to accept him as being in charge, because it's not so simple that that's clear. There is still a lot of turnover, and each king will now want to establish himself as the leader. Ahasuerus is also not the direct descendant of the previous king. He is not in a lineage. He was the general who now took over. So on the one hand, that sort of speaks to us in 2019 of somewhat of a meritocracy, that why should it be that your children should be right after you? But in that culture where you're expecting the children to take over, having an outsider is really an outsider. So he really, really, really needs to establish himself as the king. And if I...
There's also another smaller scholar.
So I'm going to argue that that's not true. I'm actually going to argue that understanding I had was taught in kindergarten, that Ahasuerus was a foolish person, is... So it's a machlokas in the Gemara. Is he a tipesh or melachacham? And what exactly, if you look at the nekuda that they're arguing about, it's some tiny detail in politics. We'll talk about it because it's really important. But I argue that if that's the only machlokas they could find, this one little detail how he handled one situation, it sounds like in the other situations, maybe he handled himself better. I'm going to make the argument as follows. Make some arguments. But who's the main character of the Megillah? So I would argue that, you know, the protagonist, who are the main character, is the one who appears the most. The one who appears the most, without question, is Ahasuerus. Right? Just by counting the words, times Hamelech, refers to Ahasuerus, appears like, I think, three times more, than any other character at all. Ahasuerus is, the whole story is about Ahasuerus, really. It starts with Ahasuerus being, if you think about it, Vahidu Ahasuerus, Hu Ahasuerus, Hamolech, Mehodu, Vakush, Sheva, Vesrimu, Mea, Medina, he's leading, right? Sheva, Samel, Ahasuerus, Alkise, Malchuso, his little establishment, how does it end? He's in charge, he levies taxes. It starts with Ahasuerus' kingship and ends with Ahasuerus' kingship, and he's pretty much almost in every scene. There are very few scenes in the Megillah in which he doesn't even appear. He is the main character, perhaps, of the Megillah. It sort of travels through Ahasuerus. Now remember, I'm much more comfortable analyzing the Megillah in terms of a literary work because it's written by Mordechai and Esther. It's admittedly written by Ruach HaKodesh, that's true, but it's written by Mordechai and Esther who lived there. So they're doing all of this on purpose. I mean, they wrote it. Right, this is not, it's Ruach HaKodesh, but this is not Torah Ben HaShemayim. They wrote it, and I believe they had all of these in mind when they did it. Ahasuerus is the character through which the Megillah is told. It happens throughout his kingship. So the Malbim argues that certainly the beginning of the Megillah, but maybe the entire story of the Megillah, is, and if you keep this in mind, it makes a lot of things make more sense, is about Ahasuerus establishing himself as the king. Now, the Megillah says, Vahi b'me Ahasuerus, who Ahasuerus? He's the Ahasuerus that we already know. So where do we know him from? So if you take a look in the packet, we actually know him from Sefer Ezra. So if you take a look in Sefer Ezra, so we're going to skip around a little bit. I gave you the first couple of prakim. If you look at the very beginning of Sefer Ezra, so I apologize, I couldn't get the English in the normal size font. So Bishnat Achad LeKoresh Melech Paras. So Koresh is the new leader of Paras. Lichloz Dvar Hashem Mipi Yirmiyah. This is after Yirmiyah, whose nevuah has already ceased. What exactly does that mean? It's over. It's not over. It's about to be over. You'll see why this is relevant. Hashem inspires Koresh. And he says, Koamar Koresh Melech Paras. Kol Mamlochos Ha'aretz not only Hashem Elokei Hashemayim. Hashem made me the king over everywhere. Is the Goyish king. He's recognizing that Hashem put him in charge. And it's therefore up to me to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. This is Koresh Melech Paras feels inspired by his being able to rule over the entire country, the world. Now, if you think about it for a moment, the Persians took over from the Babylonians. If you recognize that there's a hand of God in this, he is now the king of everywhere, pretty much, that he knows about. That's a big deal. Now, Rashi here starts to explain what exactly is happening. So, he says, well, you know, if you recall, so Sefer Daniel is right before Sefer Ezra. So Daniel talks about Belshazzar after Belshazzar was Daryavet Hamadi. Right, the Madaim took over, and then Koresh and then Ahasuerus. And he says, and this is the story. So Koresh is before Ahasuerus. And so this is fascinating what happens. So Pazagimu, Mibachemi Kolamo, Yihasem Elokavimo, V'yali Yerushalayim Asher Yehuda, he's encouraging Aliyah. V'yivim et beis Hashem Elokei Yisrael, hu Elokim Asher Yerushalayim. They should go and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. This is like, what? This is perfect. This is what the Jews want. So he says, but now he's a savvy guy. He recognizes that not everyone's going to take him up on this. The kolon nishar mikol makomas asheru garsam, and so whoever's staying, yinasu on shem makomo v'kesef v'zavir rechusha v'behema yimen adavos l'beita elokim asher Yerushalayim. You're staying back? We'll fund the people who are going. You don't want to go, so help them go. This is like exactly what the Jews wanted. They didn't even ask him. So all those who were inspired, they in fact go. And so everyone else sponsored them. They helped them out. This is a beautiful thing. Those who want to make aliyah, make aliyah. Those who want to pretend that it's still okay to live in Chutz La'aretz. I know I also live in Chutz La'aretz. So we're supporting the aliyah at least. That's what happens. It's perfect. It even gets better. V'hamelech Koresh, Pasuk Zayin, hosi et kli beis Hashem asher hosi Nebuchadnezzar Yerushalayim ve'et nem ve'et elokav. He says, well, all this stuff that Nebuchadnezzar took from the Beis HaMikdash, he takes out. V'yotziem Koresh melech paras al yad mitridat ha'gizbar ve'yitzperim l'sheish betzara nesil Yehuda. He counts all of it. Ve'elam yitzperam, and he goes through all of what it is. It gives you a whole inventory. You take a look. And he gives it to them. Take a look in Perek Beis. He gives it to them to go and build the Megillah. I have all this stuff I inherited from the Nebuchadnezzar. Take it. Go. Go build the Beis HaMikdash. Now, fascinating. He gave them the stuff. He hears them as Rucho. Now, the Machlokas in the Gemara of Koresh Melech Kasher Harya, or in the end of the day, Koresh maybe became not such a great person. But right now, he's like, this is all wonderful. This is great. Like, what else do you want from the Persian king? So now, the Perek Beis is a little bit, if you're into math, maybe you like it. It just lists who went. Tells you who went to Yerushalayim, and the numbers. And if you're used to reading the numbers from like Sefer Shmos or Sefer Bamidbar, you'll notice these numbers are missing a handful of zeros, like a lot. Like if, for example, you know, there's 10 people, 25 people, 52 people, there's not hundreds of thousands of people here. We're talking about not so many people going. You could do all the math. It's really just not so many. It's a little bit sad, in fact. It's a little bit sad how many people end up going. And then they, Then the psukim goes through, this is relevant to sugyas in the Gemara, that there were people, there were kohanim who couldn't find their yichus, they couldn't trace it back, so they weren't allowed to be kohanim. Fine, okay, all good. So they all went. So if you take a look in Perek Beis, Pasuk Samach Dalid, Kolak al kechad, arba ribo, alpaim shlosh meot shishim. 42,360 people went back to Rishalayim. That's not a lot. That's not a lot comparing how many people stayed in Paras. Not so many people. Okay, how many cattle? Okay, all good. And they go, fine, they all get back to Israel. If you look at the middle of the Paragimel, Vayigah, Chodesh HaShvi'i, Bnei Yisrael Be'arim, Vayaslam, Ki'isachad Yerushalayim, the seventh month, that's Tishrei. They're all living wherever. They come to Yerushalayim. So, presumably for Sukkot, but if you're not so many people, you want to celebrate Rosh Hashanah and Kippur all together, Beis HaMikdash, there is no Beis HaMikdash yet. But they all come to Yerushalayim to celebrate together. So, Vayasu Ha'am Kishachad Yerushalayim. So now they say, okay, now they're all in Yerushalayim. So look in Pasuk Beis, Paragimel. Vayakam Yeshua ben Yotzadok ve'echav HaKohanim Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel ve'echav Vayivnu his Mizbach Elkei Yisrael. They build a Mizbeach. So, okay, is it a Bama Gedola? Is it not a Bama Gedola? Is a Mizbeach Kosher without Makraven Afal Bishayin Bayis? Can you have a Mizbeach without a Beis HaMikdash if it's in the right place? Fascinating question in the Gemara's Bachim. But they do build a Mizbeach, and on that Mizbeach you can bring Korban HaTzibur, presumably. Correct, okay. Fascinating sugyas in the Gemara, not for our issue. But they build, they're starting to build. V'yachinu Mizbeach HaMechonotav ki be'imaleh. So now, Pasuk Gimel is important. V'yachinu Mizbeach HaMechonotav. They do it carefully. Ki be'ema aleihem me'ameha aratzos. Be'ema. They're in fear from the neighbors living around them. Ve'yalu alav olos, asem olos, la'bogar v'erev. They bring korbanos, but they're nervous about something. Ve'yesu et chagat sukot ka'katuv. They celebrate sukkis. Ve'olat yom yom, v'yispar k'mishpat v'yom yomo. They bring all the korbanos like they should have. Remember, there's fewer people, and so that participation there was a lot, meaning when you have all of Klal Yisrael, so we have a principle that the Korbanos Tzibur are not sponsored by, you know, the Katz family on Tuesday and the Cohen family on Wednesday. The Korbanos Tzibur have to be by a communal fund. So that's generally the Machzis HaShekel. The Machzis HaShekel, each person gives a half a shekel, and that goes to the communal fund. And the communal fund now sponsors all of the Korbanos, so it's brought on behalf of all of Klal Yisrael. So the Mefarshim say, no, you have to understand, a Machzis HaShekel was the minimum. What you need to do is figure out how many Korbanos do you need that year. How much do you expect them to cost? Now, there's a fluctuation in price of animals throughout the year. You got to take that into consideration as well. And then divide it by the number of people you reasonably expect to give a matzah shekel. So when you have millions of people living in Israel, it's a lot less money. When you only have 42,000, and it's a lot more money. So they're funding all of this. Wonderful. People are happy. They're donating. They're participating. Okay. Miyom echad lachodesh hashvi'i echilu alot olot l'ashem ve'echal l'ashem lo yusad. Start on miyom echad lachodesh hashvi'i. That's Rosh Hashanah. They started. Ve'echal l'ashem lo yusad. They had a mizbeach. They did not yet have a beis hamikdash. Ve'inu kesev lachotzim l'charashim u'machal u'mishtev ha'shem l'tzidonim v'lastorim l'avi ha'seirazim l'vanon l'yam yafo kirishon korosh melech paras alem. So they go and they go, oh, we need materials. So they start farming out materials and they start paying that they should start getting wood and gold and it's not in Yerushalayim. You got to get it from elsewhere, and they have permission from Koresh. Wonderful. Ubashanash and Pasuk Ches. Ubashanash Shenis Lebo'anu Beit Elokim LeYerushalayim B'chodesh Shani. Echelu Zerubbabel Ben Shealtiel VeYeshuv Ben Yosef Zarachem Akvanim VeLevim VeChol Abayim Es Yerushalayim VeYamidu LeLevim. Okay, they get everybody ready, and they start building. You need everybody together, and you need the funds, you need the materials, and indeed they start building. Pasuk Tes VeYamod Yeshua Banav VeEchav. All of them come ke'echad l'nasech l'osem l'acha b'veis ha'elokim. Fine. They get everybody to start being, you know, you have a lot of contractors in one room. I'm not sure how this worked out so well. But okay, they have a lot of supervisors, and they start building. And the kohanim get ready, and there's halel and hodah. It's a wonderful event. I'm not detracting from that. Just not our purposes right now. Then this is important. Pasuk is based, not our issue either. But rabim ha'kohanim v'alvim v'rashay avot ha'skinim asher ro'u es ha'bayit ha'rishon b'yasdo zeh ha'bayit v'inehem. Bochim giz bekol gadol. Those who remember the first Beis HaMikdash are crying now at the second Beis HaMikdash. V'rabim b'tro b'simcha l'arim kol. And yet you have others who are just excessively happy. Presumably those who did not see the first Beis HaMikdash. V'ein ha'am makirim kol tzuras ha'simcha l'kol b'chi ha'am. And it was unclear which was louder. Gemara says that the second Beit HaMikdash was, there 42,000 people came back. They're like, Bekoshi able to build anything. Later, the second Beit HaMikdash became glorious in terms of the building. But right now, it's nothing. And those who saw the first one were crying at how terrible it was. And those who didn't see the first one were like, at least we have something. And they were happy. It was a big mess. Fine. Perek Dal is where the trouble begins. They were tormenting them. They were enemies of them in Yehuda and Binyamin. Those are the areas surrounding Yerushalayim. Some yes, some no. It doesn't say. Right? Because Melech Asher came and was Meval Bel Kol Ha'aretz. We don't exactly know their... They could be Samaritans, they could be other nations, right? The same way when they took the Jews out of Israel, they mixed everybody up. Yeah. Fine. That Bnei HaGolah, I'm sorry? Yeah. Okay, correct. So Bnei HaGolah, meaning the Jews from the Golos, are now building the Beit HaShem. They heard this. So they come to Zerubbabel, who's in charge, and they say, Nivnei Imachem, we'll build with you. Ki kachem nidrosh lelokechem, we're going to worship with you. We've been worshiping God, your God, from the time of Esar Chadon, Melech Ashur. Like they built, who brought us here. Wherever they were from, they were transferred to Eretz Yisrael. Meaning, it's an interesting model. You want to take over a country, you send the people out, you bring new people in, it sort of doesn't give them roots. No. Thank you, but no thank you. No. Chorus gave me permission, we're good. No, not a good idea. You guys do your thing, we'll do our thing. The Pasuk already identifies them as the Tsarim. Like, they're not friendly folk, despite their attempt. They're not trying to help. And you know that because the next Pasuk. Vi amaret mirapim yedei am Yehuda. These people around them were mirapei adam. Lirapot, to make soft, to make weak. They were trying to weaken their efforts, right? And they were scaring them not to be able to build. They were preventing the building. And they hired political activists, seemingly to Koresh, to cancel out this idea, to stop them. All the days of Koresh and his son Daryavesh, he also had a Daryavesh, right? It's a common, apparently it's a common name. So, and they named after their grandparents, whatever. So, the whole time they were appealing to them, political activism, stop the building of the Beit HaMikdash, stop the building of the Beit HaMikdash. It didn't seem to work, because the next Pasuk says, Pasuk above, Uvi Malchus Achashverosh, Betchilas Malchuso, Achashverosh takes over next. Now, now they send a letter. They send what we call a sitna. Sitna is by Yisom Yisav Yaakov, right? A letter of hatred and of a condemnation against Yosef Yehudav Yerushalayim to Achashverosh. And although their activism was not successful with Koresh and his son Daryavesh, it was successful with Achashverosh, which is very interesting. And so we only have a few minutes, but let's go through it. But it's in Aramaic, because they sent it to Achashverosh, who presumably understood it. Artachshasta, which is the Aramaic form of Achashverosh. Why you had to change it, I don't know, but it was confusing enough. Katav Bishlam Mitratav Elush Arkav Navotav Al Artachshasta Melech Paras Achtav Yisavad Kaduv Aramit Uvzor Gam Aramit. Okay, his ministers write it in Aramaic to Achashverosh, or Artachshasta. It's very, very wordy. It tells you who wrote it. They all wrote it. If you keep going, it tells you who wrote the letter. And they sent it. Wonderful. So they say, look. They tell him as follows. They say, look, all of these nations, you're in charge of. We represent all the nations that the Ashurim sent here to Israel. We live here. Dina, and they're representing them. And so if you look in Pasuk Yud Beis, Yediha Levei Lavalcha, we're just giving you information. That's the best type of act. We're just telling you information. You decide. We're not going to tell you what to do. The Yehudai, the Sliku Min Levatach, Aleina Atir Yerushalayim, these Jews who came from you, Koresh, came to Yerushalayim, Kiryota Maradita, Ubiashta Banayin, Vishuraya Shachlilu, Ushaya Yachitu. It's a terrible place, Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is a city of rebellion. Now think about it for a moment. It is. It is. We were never happy under foreign rule. We always rebelled against foreign rule, from our perspective. From the Goyim's perspective, we're a very difficult place to govern. If they build this city and this Beit HaMikdash, they're not going to pay these taxes anymore. They're going to declare their independence. We can't we wouldn't want this to happen to your kingdom. If they establish Jerusalem and build a Beit HaMikdash, your king, they're not going to pay. They're going to be rebel against you. We don't want this to happen to you. We're just informing you. And then I can prove it. He says, if you look, the next thing, go check the history books. This is true. It's a city that's rebellious. And it was rebelling and causing problems for kings of Babel and Asher for years. Until it was destroyed, this is a terrible place. Just letting you know, they're rebuilding it. We're letting you know. So they send it. And in the end, he sends back a letter. And he says, Ahasuerus sends back a letter. He sends back a letter. And he says, yeah, I'm not going to go through it right now. I only have 1 minute. I checked the history books. You're right. This is a terrible place. They need to stop building the Beit HaMikdash. And Ahasuerus, the Ahasuerus of the Megillah, is the one who causes the stopping to build the Beit HaMikdash. They barely got started, and Ahasuerus stops the building of the Beit HaMikdash. Because he's nervous about what? Could he care less, in all honesty? Does it make a difference to him? I can imagine that there were temples and all sorts of things in Me'av Esrim Medina, Hodu Vad Kush. No one was worshipping anything. Did he care? Did he really care that Me'hodu Vad Kush, right? Everyone's speaking different languages, you know, from the Megillah. They're sending letters in different languages. They all have their own gods and their own religions and their own rituals. Could he honestly care less that they're worshipping a Kadosh Baruch Hu? No. What speaks to him? They're going to rebel against you. Right. Your kingdom is going to fall apart. Your kingdom is a problem. This is the Ahasuerus of the Megillah. The one who's nervous about his kingdom always being intact. This is our first introduction to him. I have 30 seconds left. Maybe not. I'll take another minute. But if you look carefully, the part I skipped in Perek Beis, it lists all the Jews who were there, who were in charge. One of them is kind of interesting. I mean, I'm sure they're all interesting, but I don't know who they are. One of them is sort of interesting. I'm not going to find it right now. His name is Mordechai Bilshan. Now, Mordechai only appears twice in all of Tanakh. Here, and in Megillah Esther. And it just happens to be that it's the same time frame. Very likely, it's the same person. So now he's in Yerushalayim. He then ends up in Shushan. I have to figure out exactly what Mordechai was doing in each place. But I think the idea here is our introduction to Ahasuerus is he's worried about politics. He's worried about establishing his kingdom. And the very first thing we know about him from before, we know, Mordechai and Esther are assuming, you know, we know the history. We know what happened just until then. We know that Ahasuerus stopped the building of the Beit HaMikdash, even though he could honestly care less. There is nothing religious that happens in the Megillah whatsoever. The persons never do anything of any ritual value in the whole Megillah. They have no ritual. They have no religion. They have rules. That's it. Why does he care? Because he cares about keeping his kingdom. He cares about keeping his kingdom intact, which explains the first three, four, five prakim of the Megillah, I think, in that light. Bezras Hashem, next week, we'll be able to continue.